Yeah, there's no point in having the most organized business in the on the planet and it doesn't sell anything.
Welcome to the EIS Navigator, the podcast for UK venture capital. I'm your host, Brian Moretta. Governance is something that all companies need to manage, but often isn't addressed in startups as well as it could be. Dermot Campbell, our CEO, is trying to make that easier. So today we get him to discuss improving governance in venture capital companies. We talk about getting the right structure at the right stage, mistakes founders make, and the role of fund managers and investors. If you're enjoying the podcast, don't forget you can subscribe through all good podcast services or following the link in the show notes. If you have any suggestions for future topics or guests, then you can email us at inquiries@harmanandco.com. Without any further ado, enjoy this episode. Welcome to podcast, Dermot.
Thank you.
It's great to have you here. We've known each other for a little while, so I'm looking forward to today. But for guests or listeners who don't know who you are, do you want to tell us a little bit about yourself and how you became involved in startups?
Sure thing. When I left my career in financial services, I got involved in a project to create a platform to enable wealth managers to easily build diversified portfolios of EIS. That project turned into Kuba Ventures, which I ran for 7 years, effectively actually founding the Kuba Ventures entity, although the project wasn't kicked off by me. And I led that until 2019, then left there and had got the bug of being a founder. So founded another business in early 2020.
And I guess that's the one that we're kind of half here to talk about today. So do you want to tell us a little bit about CEO and what it actually does?
CEO is a governance platform which is designed to help founders keep on top of their corporate admin, all their governance, and basically maintain investor readiness. It's designed really just to do all of the things that I got wrong, didn't know how to do, and didn't know was expected of me back in the Kuba days. My co-founder, a lady called Freya Yule, does come from a governance background and did know all of this stuff. A lot of the design of the project has been created by from Freya's knowledge, but that combined with my experience of giving it a go and the wild west of starting a fintech back in 2013.
Yeah, and I think that obviously leads on to a topic that we want to focus on today, which is governance, because I think it's something that is bandied around a lot and perhaps is not as well understood as it could be. I think you would probably agree with that.
I'd absolutely agree with that, yep.
Yeah, you just alluded to that, I guess, in talking about your own experiences. So maybe we take the sort of 100,000-foot view in terms of what actually is governance from your perspective.
Well, the technical answer to that is that governance is a system of management systems and controls that enable a board of directors to run a company. It's a mechanism by which you delegate all of the tasks down, and it's a mechanism that you run the company for the benefit of the shareholders. So that's the technical answer. The practical answer is that it's all of the regulation and compliance stuff that you need to do on the one hand, and that's just a small piece of it, but there's a lot of that stuff you have to do now. And then on the other hand, it's that really getting those conversations right at the board level and at the top level of the company so that it all filters down and you make the right decisions and think about the right things. There's a lot of other aspects to governance as well. There's investor reporting, which is extremely important in the startup world because, of course, you've got to maintain a really good relationship with your stakeholders.
Something that is quite often neglected, I think.
I think it is, and it's neglected at people's peril because there's no question that when you're founding a business, it's very difficult and you need help from time to time. And you don't want your shareholders to be upset with you. And you want them, when you go and speak to them, to actually be pretty pleased that you've asked them. So stakeholder relationships are very important and something which has to be got right.
Yeah, and certainly by reputation, you hear these stories about founders who get the shareholders on board, think they disappear for 12 months, and they only reappear either usually to ask for more money or when they've got a real, real problem in the business, where they haven't built up that credibility of maybe, okay, you've kind of had 12 months of sending monthly reports and saying this is how we're doing, the good and the bad. And getting that right is not easy sometimes.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think that founders in general deliberately marginalize their shareholders. I don't think that's a conscious decision they make. Most of the founders that I speak to want to get this right. But the problem is it's actually quite difficult. What do you say to them? What do you put in an investor report? And sometimes it doesn't feel like there's anything to say. So the beauty of having a system of governance in place and the beauty of having a framework is that it gives you a framework to report through.
And the mention of framework raises an interesting question, I think, because we know that companies, you know, startups in particular, start off with kind of with a blank slate. And it's kind of one of the questions is, how do we put that framework in place and what do we put in place and when do we put these things in place? And I think that's one of the key problems that people struggle with. It's not something they know they've got to have a board, but do they need a board day one? Do they need to, you know, if they've got no investors, maybe clearly investor reporting, but suddenly maybe they do, and maybe got friends and family, and then they go professional investors or angels. And how should a company kind of think or founders think about, right, we started a company, how should we approach this?
I mean, it would be massively over the top for me in sort of February 2020 to have run board meetings, because there was just me in the business. And there's no point. Well, I mean, just complete waste of time. You don't need a system of management controls when the only bit of the company is you, because there's no problem with delegating. But when you get to, you know, on your way towards unicorn status with 250, 300 people and, you know, about 10 different departments and a massively complex piece of corporate infrastructure in place, you need a lot of governance. And what normally happens is people leave it too late. Mm-hmm. And it literally takes them out for 6 months. I think a very good friend of mine who recently sold a wealth management business, I won't name him for because we all know him quite well. He said to me, I went to see him just after he'd sold. It's quite a big transaction he'd done. And he said, do you know what? I wish I'd had that platform. I wish that existed when I went into this. Mm-hmm. And I wish I'd run it all the way through, because I just lost a year of my life in creating the structure that I needed. And that is a common story. So I think the answer to the question is, the moment that you get an external investor, so yeah, if you're getting your mum investing or your dad investing or your cousin or whatever it is, maybe that's not so important because you're going to have conversations with them and their motivations are different. But the moment you get a professional investor involved, then you need to be doing governance well, and that's the point when you need to start building that governance framework.
And typically, is that a case of first external check for probably an angel, maybe SEIS fund? Is that when you create the board?
I think so. Yeah, you've now got people who are really invested, literally invested. Yeah, you're no longer running the company for your own benefit. You're now running it for somebody else's benefit. And it is that point when you need it. And also you're expected to grow the company. And as the company grows, and you need governance needs to come first and then growth second, not growth first and then governance second. Because if you haven't got the governance in place, you're not going to get the wheels are going to come off, or at least you're going to hit some potholes. So some people get away with it. Some people run with very little governance, and they just grow like billio and they fluke it. And fortunately, nothing major comes out and they don't fall over. But most people do. Mm-hmm.
So when the founders got this external investor, is it a case of, should the external investor perhaps be driving that? Or is it a case of the founder should be recognizing this and do it themselves?
I mean, I think the founder needs to take the lead in it. The investor, I mean, most VC investors and most fund investors will have a process because they're very used to founders who don't know how to put governance in place to help them get the governance in place. But basically, by the time you get to your just after your A round's closed, you need to have very good governance in place. So you need to have some proper independence on your board. I think when you first take some early EIS or SEIS money, then it's enough to have just you and your investor on the board, not without any independence. But quite soon after that, you need to be thinking about adding independence to the board. And fairly soon after that, you need to have really quite an advanced structure in place.
Yeah, and presumably the scale of company, you know, is, I mean, you know, we invest aside, we always think seed, series A, they're kind of key milestones. But sometimes it's the pace of the growth of the company that really matters as well. And that, you know, if you've got 5 employees and no, you know, almost no revenue, that probably requires less than governance. You've got 50 people and 10 million in revenue or something.
That's exactly right. But if you're going to get to the place where you've got 50 employees and you know, millions of revenue, you're going to have to put the governance in place before you get there.
And how do fund managers typically kind of work with that? You know, if they come into a company and there's no governance, do they say, right, okay, here's our structure, feed off this? Do they say, you've got to do something about it? What's their approach typically?
I mean, it's quite hard for them because there's a lot of pressure on fund managers and they don't have a massive amount of time. They're not massively resourced. It's actually a very expensive business running a fund, and it's a very difficult job to run a fund. They will have a basic structure in place. They will write into the agreements that they want, you know, either 6 or 10 board meetings a year. There'll be a specific number. 4's probably too few. 6 is not a bad number. 12 is probably too many.
All right. And is that something that would change over time? Is that something on day one you only, you know, you might be able to get away with 4, or is that something you see in various?
Yeah, I think that's probably right. And it's easy enough to ramp up the number of board meetings you have. You definitely don't want to be completely strangled by board meetings and having them every other week. There's a lot of work in preparing for a board meeting. You know, you can't just walk in there, show up and wing it. You actually do have to put some a lot of effort into planning it. That's one of the things that the platform automates a lot of. You know, building a board agenda isn't straightforward. There's a lot of things you need to be putting in there. You need to know what you need to be looking up, what you've got to review. You need to look at what needs to be approved. But the important bit is, what are you going to discuss and what matters in the business? And that comes from all of the underlying, all of the progress that you've made on all the various different objectives. So on day one, I mean, our investor, Simban, who I have to say, it's been a really interesting journey seeing investment from the other end. At Kuber, I saw a lot of investment going through, as you know, through the platform. But seeing it from the other end as a founder, yes, we had investors at Kuber, but they were mostly angels, and it was slightly, it wasn't the same as seeing it through through a fund. They do put a lot of work into that, and they give their companies a huge amount of help and support. I'm actually amazed how much they do. Yeah, they will do a huge number of the filings for them. They will do, they'll prepare a lot of the legal documents for them, all of that. So there's a lot of work goes in from the fund. And I'd say it's a big old job. And I think this is one of the reasons why a number of the funds are really keen on what we do, especially the early funds.
Yeah. Yeah. And you know, we know Keel and Nick very well. And I know they, as an ethos, have had governance as one of their sort of key things that they sort of go in and work on, which I think they put more emphasis than perhaps some of the managers.
I think there are a couple out there who are slightly cavalier about it. Mm-hmm. But I think most managers recognize that you need to get to your A round. And let's face it, anybody who's investing in early stage EIS is going to be planning for that company to get to an A round. That's a natural milestone. There are investors out there who have the attitude that really the only thing that a company should be doing in the early stages is selling. But that's actually not quite right. It's definitely, in my view, misguided, because I think it leaves the company very vulnerable. Yeah, if you've got a proper board and risk framework in place, you've given some thought to what can go wrong. Now, some of the risks that you look at, there's nothing you can do about them. They're just there and you can't help it. All you can do is be aware of them. But then other risks, actually, there are things you can do something about. And by sitting there and thinking about those risks, it makes a huge difference. So I don't agree with the people out there who say it's just a job to get out there and sell. But I think most people are changing their view on that at the moment anyway, because of the funding environment.
Yeah. Certainly that influences thing. I mean, I've taken the view that actually, in some sense, the core function of venture capital industry is to put good governance in place. That is their key, the core skill.
Pretty much. I mean, you've pretty much nailed it there. That is what they need to do. It's the founder's job to get the strategy right. It's the founder's job to drive the strategy. And it's the VC's job to help the founder get good at governance.
So you mentioned about risks and analysing risks there, which I think is an interesting thing in terms of, again, thinking about different stages of the company. And there's this idea that, the first board meeting, I mean, I've reported a couple of boards when I've had a manager, and you've got sort of these RAG reviews and detailed risk registers and things. Do you think that's something that should be there from day one of the board meeting? Do you think it's just, okay, let's think of, or maybe it's more appropriate to have, here's like the key risks and maybe other things we can pick up later down the line?
So when a company first registers on the platform, we create a set of 10 template risks for them. The idea is that the company then goes, the founder will then go in and change those. He'll say, that's not quite right for me, but actually it should look like this. And they'll reword them to fit their circumstances.
So what might be a typical sort of thing in that?
Risk that customers don't like your product. Risk that you fail to raise enough money. Risks, those sorts of things. Those are sort of typical risks. That might be in there. Risk that your product might damage your customers. Risk that you might get your trademark compromised. All sorts of things like that. There's about 10 of them which we've identified, which are quite generic and common. And the idea is to stimulate thought so that people go, well, that's not a problem, but actually this is. So they'd add in the new one. So those risks then they'll go through and categorize each risk. Is it very likely or not likely, and is it going to have a big impact, a medium impact, or a small impact? That gives a risk score to each risk, which drives a review frequency. So if you've got a high risk, high probability, high impact risk, you need to be talking about that a lot. That'll come up in every board meeting. If you've got a low, then it won't have much impact and isn't a very likely risk, then you don't need to talk about that really very often at all. So the platform then organizes all of that and slots a group of risks in for review at every meeting. And you'll sit down and you'll talk about them and you'll say, are these risks relevant and are they the right risks? And is the mitigant which we've got in place the right mitigant? And that's why the board matters, because that's the point when you get to sit around and have a conversation and talk about these things. So the other thing which we do on that as well is the corporate objectives, which are the other half of the framework. Your vision's the long term, your mission is what you're doing today, and in around your mission you will have between 6 and 10 individual objectives. And that might be hire a bunch of people, sell your product, build your product, those sorts of things. And again, those objectives get fed through the board meetings for review on a regular basis. So when you start off, they're not going to be quite right for you. They're not going to be ideal. But by the time you've been running it for 2 or 3 years, actually, you should have really nailed those and you should have had the precise right metrics sitting underneath them. So the idea being that you've got the high level SMART objective, and underneath that, you've got 4 or 5 specific metrics or key indicators, and that's how it's designed to work. And then you'll talk about those. So you'll report on the metrics so that you know how you're progressing against your objectives. And you'll have a generic conversation on the board about the how the progress is. And then you'll have a separate conversation about the strategy, which is, are the objectives right and are the metrics right?
In an ideal world, this would be simply a formalization of what a founder should be thinking about doing anyway.
Yeah.
You know, how often do you sort of see founders coming along and saying, oh, yeah, well, actually, there's these five areas of real on top of, but actually, there's these other three that I hadn't really thought about properly, and maybe you're right, I should be paying more attention to them.
I think most of the time founders have a strategy in their head, and it's a pretty clear strategy, and they've probably written it down in the business plan somewhere. The problem with the business plan is it's a beautiful document which is prepared for their fundraising, and it goes out to their investors before they raise the money. It gets read, it gets agreed, it gets put in a drawer, and then they get on with the day, the proper job of running the business. And this was me all day long in Cuba. This is exactly how it worked. And you get on with running the business, and you've got a pretty clear idea of what you're trying to do in your head. But you're in the trenches, and you drift away from it. But the great thing about breaking it down into the vision, mission, and objectives is that this gives you an anchor point every quarter, or every month, or every other month when you come back for your board meeting. And it really does help anchor you into where you need to be. So I don't think the founders ever don't know what their objectives are. They often haven't articulated them, but they generally know what the objectives are. The key is that do they measure them, and do they track their progress against them? And that's one of the differences which I think we offer.
Yeah, you mentioned KPIs, and I think KPIs are key. They don't necessarily measure everything. But what will you say is the challenging thing for founders about generating the right KPI or a good KPI?
This is where they'll work closely with their investors, and the investors should really be able to help them with them. Yeah, getting the KPIs, I think getting something down at the beginning and then experiencing measuring it, you realize whether the something which you put down at the beginning was relevant or not. And quickly, when you realize it's, if you start, I don't know, measuring monthly active users as part of your customer engagement objective, you may realize that that's bang on the right metric, or you may suddenly come to the realization that actually there's a much better one. You will figure it out as you use it, and as time goes by, and as you revolve through the various cycles.
Yeah, so it's key that these things are not, it's not a case of one and done, in a sense. It's very much, and as the business evolves, I guess naturally other KPIs will appear if you're expanding in different areas or doing different activities.
Absolutely, and you'll think of them at 3 o'clock in the morning, and the whole idea is that your governance framework is a living thing, which will look completely different, to what it did 3 months ago. And that's the whole thing. You're supposed to be dynamic and flexible and agile as a founder. And that's the whole point about it. So it is something which moves a lot.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because it seemed to me, I was listening earlier talking about building boards and building board agendas. And again, I reported as a board of investment trust once. And essentially we had the same agenda more or less every time. Twice a year, you'd have the annual and interim reviews, but basically it's kind of, you've got pretty much the same agenda. And my natural instinct for a board is like, okay, you create an agenda and then you kind of use that as the basis going forwards. But I'm not quite sure that's appropriate here.
There are some things about it which are pretty static. So you're going to have the conversation about your progress against objectives. It's going to be, it's not the same conversation, but it's the same agenda item. You're going to have you're going to have a bunch of things which are for approval. They're going to be the same things which are for approval. It's going to be the same agenda line, but it's not going to be the same items. We build in something called horizon planning into every board agenda. Horizon planning is where you're scanning the future and thinking, well, A, what potential problems are coming down the path, but what potential opportunities are coming down the path. It's a real skill. It's quite a difficult thing to do. And yeah, we're finding our feet in terms of how do we get the board agenda to work, and how do we get the most out of that bit of it. But it's quite a useful thing. But so there are some quite consistent things about an agenda, but there's a bunch of things that, yeah, for example, for approval, you'll have your confirmation statement for one boarding meeting a year where you need to say, well, yes, we've done the confirmation statement. Annual accounts will be another time, different time of the year, probably 9 months later, but not necessarily. So there's a whole bunch of things which will come through, which come at different times. And the idea of the governance timetable within the platform is it feeds the right things in at the right time.
And when it comes to boards, how do you think about sort of reporting versus strategy? Because it seems to me it's very easy for a board to get bogged down in reporting, in the sense that, you know, you can imagine this, a founder going along saying, well, this month we've done this, we've done this, we've done this, and then like half an hour or three quarters hour into the meeting, and all they've done is sort of talk about stuff.
Talk about that past.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think it needs to be 90% future, 10% past. It's pretty important that you prepare for a board meeting well, and preparing for a board meeting will be preparing your board reports, which will report on all of your objectives and all of your metrics and say where you've gone. And then the conversation needs to be not where you went, but where you're going. That's important. And I think getting a structured progress report into the board pack is really crucial. Otherwise, you're absolutely right. You're just going to talk about how wonderful it was last month or what a really tough time you're having with XYZ. But it needs to be mostly about the future, not about the past.
How should a founder think about managing the members of the board in terms of A, the membership of the board, and secondly, in terms of their relationship with board members?
This is where startup boards diverge dramatically from PLC boards. PLC boards will have a nomination committee whose job it is to find people to go on the board and put them on the board and so forth. The startup board needs to be a much more refined, different thing. So the PLC board will have your accountant, it'll have your lawyer, it'll have your marketeer, it'll have all of these different functions. The startup board needs to be much more tailored to that startup. It doesn't want to have 50 people on it. It needs to have, you know, 3, 4, or 5 people on it. And they need to be the right 3, 4, or 5.
I have heard suggestions that an odd number is better than an even number.
An odd number is better than an even number. But it's actually more about, I mean, what you'll normally have is you'll normally have probably 2 founders and the VC as directors. And then you'll have a bunch of observers. And you don't want too many, but you don't want too few. The observer's job is to get the conversation focused on the future and where the business is going. The investor's job is really to rubber stamp decisions. And the founder's job is to make the decisions. That's basically where it's how it should work. And then the observers, most startup boards should only have those three. Other people won't want to be directors because of the director's responsibility, and you don't need 5 people to make a decision, or want 5 people to make a decision, but you do want advisors. So the people that you have need to be advisors who know what they're doing. A good friend of mine, Ed Goodchild, wrote a blog about spoon lickers on LinkedIn a while ago. There are a lot of people around who want to pick up a bit of equity for turning up and just talking nonsense. That's not what you want. You want people who know the industry, have got some experience, know what they're doing, and are able to give you good, sensible advice. A bit of advice I received recently was, look, do you actually need to build that? Because what difference is it actually going to make to your customers? that's the sort of thing that you want them saying, because it's very easy to get, you know, on product development, it's very easy to get very excited about a particular piece of functionality. And the observer needs to be somebody who's got the experience to say, is that actually going to help you?
Yeah. Have you evidenced that? Have you done the test? Whatever.
So again,
yeah. Have you evidenced
that? It might not be, have you done the test? It might just be, you know, can we have a subjective discussion about this? Is it going to help us? Because a lot of this is subjective.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. And well, almost all of it in some sense. So by the sounds of things, you're saying that the classic, we think of quoted companies, the independent non-executive, does that have a place at all in startups? Is this something maybe, you know, Series A, Series B, Series D is at that point?
I mean, it probably does have a place in regulated startups.
Mm-hmm. You mean financial services companies sort of things, or?
Financial services, regulated fintechs, things like that, where, mm-hmm. where you have to have them by law. So, or not by law, but by the FCA's regulations.
Mm-hmm.
But for anybody else, board observers is where you want to be going.
Mm-hmm.
Otherwise, you would just end up with a hugely complicated business mm-hmm. Board, which you don't need.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. And I suppose the other option, you can always invite people along to the board. So if you had, I don't know, an external marketing consultant or something along the lines, in theory, you could invite them along to the board as well if required.
I mean, you can in theory. I'm not... people do that. My view is the board meeting's a board meeting, and that's where you have a private conversation, and you don't want any leaking. So I don't tend to invite consultants and advisors onto board meetings. Tend to take the advice from them separately. I might invite them in for a section to present a bit, and then go away again. So they might step in to present a piece. If there's a complex piece of advice, then I invited our accountants once into at Cuba into the board to present a complex piece of advice. It was because there was a risk that if I repeated the advice, I was going to get it wrong, basically. But no, normally you would. Normally, I think that the board is for the board.
What mistakes do these startups kind of making in this area?
Doing nothing, being chaotic. Yeah, so a chaotic set of records, which are just everywhere. Relying on other people to maintain their records. Not having any clearly defined objectives and metrics so that they're not really going in any consistent direction. Having no idea what the risks are and having never set out the risks. Most of them have an idea of what some of the risks are, but few of them have an idea of what a comprehensive risk packages. Those are the main risks that I see. Founders are generally forward-thinking individuals. They don't live in the moment. They do tend to think forward, but they're also glass half full characters.
I don't think, you know, every fund manager will tell you about how founders need to be almost delusional. In the sense of statistically the odds against the business succeeding are not strong. So to go into it, you probably need to be convinced.
But you can make them a lot stronger. Yeah, you can increase the odds dramatically. Yeah, it's difficult to raise funding because people find it difficult to raise funding because most people have shoddy governance, and investors run a mile from shoddy governance. You say that it's 1 in 100 companies get funded, but actually when you take out the shoddy governance, it comes out about 1 in 30, maybe even less. And then you put in, a structured approach, you put in, a lot of organization, and then you narrow the odds dramatically. Yeah, the odds aren't good, but the odds are challenging, but they're not, there's a lot of rubbish out there. Although I did hear somebody say to me recently that there's far less rubbish than there used to be.
Mm-hmm. I think there's a general sort of understanding of this world better. Certainly when I started my career as a quoted fund manager, sort of venture capital was this really obscure thing that nobody had ever heard of. And now it's mainstream would be an exaggeration, but it's known. Very few people who...
It's a much more widely used asset class, isn't it?
Yeah. I think the other question I want to ask about governance, you say people lack a governance. Do you ever see people with drowning themselves in governance, going too far the other way, saying, oh, right, I've just started a company, I need a three-person board and putting all that sort of stuff in place? And
yeah, I think you do see that a bit, less so. But being an organized failure is not a good thing. I mean, and there is an absolute sweet spot. You've got to get it. Yeah, too much and you'll strangle yourself, too little and you'll starve. There is a sweet spot, and that sweet spot moves as the company grows. So yeah, there's no point in having the most organized business on the planet and it doesn't sell anything.
In the wide world, we've seen the rise of ESG over the past sort of 5 years, something along those lines.
Yeah, 2019 was the first time I heard it.
5 years is a good guess then. I think we had this evolution from SRI, which is social responsible investing.
Yeah.
And ESG kind of sounds like the same thing, but it had governance added in. And it seems to me one of the slightly incongruous, because you've got this situation for the average punter out there. They quite often care about the environment. They quite often care about social outcomes. But governance is kind of, they don't explicitly care about it other than a means to an end. You know, something goes wrong and there was bad governance in place, then they're really upset. But generally speaking, it's not an objective they care about particularly. How do you see that?
Yeah, I mean, I think that ESG is a word which has been massively hijacked. And so look, the environment is very important, and building sustainable companies, fixing sustainable problems is all stuff which we have to do. But there are a few problems with it. E was the very easy bit to go and jump on the bandwagon for, and lots of people did it. S is also important. I don't think it gets talked about that much. I mean, S is and governance just never gets mentioned. The G is just completely, it is hardly ever comes up. So I'm definitely not saying and that you shouldn't do E. However, the E is a lot more pertinent to larger companies than it is to smaller companies. If you think about things like your carbon footprint and should you actually travel all the time, travel everywhere, things like that, that's important. So in that respect, I do think that E should be considered. S, of course, is all about really about people, society, and social. And it is important that our company, that businesses look after the society. S starts with your own team, and then it goes through to your wider sphere of influence. There has been quite a lot. I mean, we are way better at looking after people than we used to be, and we've certainly seen benefits in larger companies social initiatives. But G really doesn't get talked about, and definitely not down here in the startup world. Yeah, you can't implement any of the E or any of the S without the G. So it does need to be looked at, and it never is.
But it comes back to my point in a sense. It's an important facilitator, and maybe you're right in that the E and the S are conditional on G. But is there a way of making it an objective that people care about? Or do you think is that something we should be doing?
A lot of ESG is about metrics, isn't it? It's about measuring your impact on the environment, and measuring your impact on society, and measuring your impact on governance. So public companies, absolutely, they get that, and they do have to have their governance measured, and they do have to report on many, many, many aspects of it. And you, Brian, you'll have read plenty of PLC reports in your time.
One or two.
And they do report, they do go into the governance. So it does get looked up up there. It's down here in the startup world that it doesn't get looked at, and it needs to.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, it sounds like you are trying your best to rectify that anyway.
We're definitely on a quest to do that. And I truly believe that if you get governance right, then your company has like a vastly better chance of success.
Without good governance, you're not necessarily doomed to failure, but you're certainly stacking the deck against you a bit.
I think you've hit the nail on the head there. You're stacking the odds against you. And governance doesn't need to take a lot of time. It just needs to take a bit of time. It doesn't take hours to get yourself set up on CEO. It's a relatively straightforward thing to do. And then it just runs in the background. Yeah, governance should really be seamless. You shouldn't be constantly worrying about it. It should just kind of trundle along. And that's how we've designed the platform.
Yeah, because I think there is this thing about we've talked about board meetings, preparing board decks and whatever. And if you're taking 2 or 3 or 4 days to prepare your board deck, is that too much? And how should
one day to prepare your board deck, it's too much. I mean, look, you don't have much time. Startups are really resource constrained.
Yeah.
But I reckon it takes me about an hour to get fully ready for a board meeting from scratch using the platform. And that includes writing the report. The way we built it is quite neat. It's actually quite quick and easy to build. It sends everybody who owns a metric, all metrics get owned by somebody, and they get sent an email when they're due to report on the metric. And it basically says, what have you done? What are you doing? And what are you going to do? And are there any problems? And do you need some help? And you can rustle through, you can whip through your metrics in no time on that basis. Some bits need a bit more work, some bits need less. But actually, because you've got that structure, it's very quick to do.
Yeah. No, that does sound like a very good step. Yeah, maybe at some point in the future, we need to do a proper in-depth analysis of this platform so we can understand it a bit better.
Yeah. I'd love to spend some time with you going through it, Brian. I think you'd have a lot of very useful feedback.
Yes. We'll save that. We'll put a pin in that for the moment.
Yes.
We'll come back to that. But for now, what I'd like to do is move on to our standard questions. So because you're not an investor, we're going to take a couple out, but we'll throw these at you and get your thoughts. So do you want to tell us about a time you failed and what you learned from it?
Well, the obvious failure is going to be Cuba. I mean, what did I learn from it? I learned a massive amount from my experience at Cuba. Cuba was a great business. I think the problem with it was that the market wasn't really big enough. It was focusing on just EIS. It was quite an expensive platform to put in place. And I think that was fundamentally where the problem lay with it was that the market wasn't really big enough on that.
Yeah, it's kind of interesting. I mean, we've obviously got, I think at one point we had three platforms, sort of Cuba, Co-Investor and Growth Invest. The way it looks like at the moment is that Growth Invest seems to be the survivor out of that. I think Co-Invest has gone in a different direction again.
Yeah, I mean, I think it was sad. I think Cuba made the wrong decision deciding to focus on a small number of funds on a managed fund service. I think that could have come in 5 years' time, but they needed to get but pivoting to do that was the thing that killed Cuba. And there's a massive number of learns out of that. The thing is that you kind of have successes and failures all the way through as a founder. I mean, I can give you a reel off a long list of them. We'll be here all day.
So the EIS and VC industry that we work in is great in many ways, but it's far from perfect. What would you like to change about it?
What I'd like to see is a far better system. And I'd like to see people understanding a system that whereby it's not about a one-off funding shot. Companies need successive funding rounds. And I'd like to see a far more efficient system built whereby there's a handover from seed to early stage to later stage to A round, and a natural funding journey, which the whole infrastructure supported, instead of this quite disjointed system. I think that's the bit which will really change, well, really the startup industry generally. Yeah, I definitely see that Cinven are actually quite good at that. I see others who are less good at that. And I think that's a really important thing. I think everybody needs to get better at it and to create more of a journey.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think we see one or two managers who've created multi-stage pools of capital. So Cinven have got their SEIS and EIS funds. Yeah. And there's a few managers who have that, not a huge number. And certainly when you speak with managers, quite often they say, well, actually, we might do a follow-on round, but that rarely could they do the whole follow-on round. And often they see one of the key jobs is to find the funder for the next round rather than do it themselves.
Yeah, but I think they need to be far better at that, finding the funder for the next round. Mm-hmm. You're right. I mean, it does take a lot of capital to build a business. But equally, there needs to be stress in the system to make sure that, make sure it does work, because
you don't want automatic funding. Easy. Yeah.
Yeah. It can't be too easy, but there's got to be stress in the system. Mm-hmm. So,
yeah. Yeah. And there's probably more stress just now because capital's a bit scarcer than it was 2 years ago.
Yeah. But arguably, it's the same as it was 4 or 5 years ago.
Yeah. True.
Yeah. So, yeah.
So as regular listeners know, I'm an avid reader and always looking out for recommendations. Are any books out there you like and would recommend?
B2B Go-to-Market Handbook for SaaS Leaders. Every startup founder has to read that book. They may not be doing B2B SaaS, but it's still full of absolute gems. Can't recommend it highly enough. There's a whole load of other things in there as well. I think for anybody who's in the business of promoting funds to wealth managers, I'd highly recommend Medic, which is a sales methodology. It is metrics, economic buyer, decision process, decision criteria, indicated pain, and champion is the mnemonic, and that's another thing I'd highly recommend.
So that's another book under that title, is it?
There are a few books on it, but there is one called Medic, which is very good.
Okay, we shall post links to both of those in the show notes as usual.
Excellent.
What do you wish when you knew you started in the VC world that you know now?
A lot. If I knew back when I founded Kuba what I know today, I think it would have been a very different outcome. I'd certainly like to have known everything in those two books when I started out.
Well, that's another recommendation for those books. That is...
Yes.
I shall definitely have to have a look at them. So if anyone wants to find out more about what you're doing as CEO, where should they go?
So they can find out lots on our website, www.seeio.co.uk. They can find me on LinkedIn, and I try to make myself extremely approachable. And
I think you are.
Generally, as long as you don't start your email with quick question, Dermot. I'll generally be responsive.
Right. And again, we shall post links to both those in show notes. So
excellent.
So thank you very much for coming on today, Dermot. Really enjoyed chatting to you again. It's been a while since we had a proper discussion. So yeah, really good to see you.
It definitely has. And I really enjoyed that chat myself as well. Thank you, Brian.
I hope you enjoyed the discussion with Dermot. As we said, a little work in governance can go a long way, so it's good to get insights into how to do that well. As usual, you can get full show notes with links at harmonico.com/podcast. You can subscribe to the podcast on all good podcast services and players, or through the link in the show notes. If you like what you hear, then please tell a friend or a colleague, or give us a review on your favourite podcast app. We can be contacted at inquiries@harmonico.com. Thanks for listening, and we'll be back in 2 weeks' time.